Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 10th of February. Race is playing now through February 23rd at Next Act Theater in Milwaukee. The playwright is David Mamet, and Race debuted on Broadway in 2009. Briefly, here's the story. It's two lawyers, Henry, who is black, Jack, who is white, are called to defend a wealthy white client who's charged with the rape of an African-American woman. Their new hire, Susan, is an Ivy League-educated black associate who's also involved in the case. And the issues are many. There are stereotypes, prejudices, fears, anger, guilt, shame, privilege, and the list goes on. And we're delighted that the two guests who play two of the lawyers are with us in our Milwaukee studios this hour so we can talk about all of those issues. David Cesarini is with us. He plays Jack Lawson, the white lawmaker. He's been in theater for 36 years and has been producing artistic director for Milwaukee's Next Act Theater for 22 years. He played Vince Lombardi in Lombardi, The Only Thing, Ben in Last of the Boys, and he has been in many other shows, has directed all kinds of productions, including The Pavilion, The Dresser, The Real Thing, Between East and West. David, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Kathleen. Thanks.
Yeah, well, good, rip-roaring good discussion this hour. Lee Palmer plays the African-American lawyer, Henry Brown. Lee is an actor, a director, a choreographer, and a drummer, I understand. At Next Act, he performed in Perfect Mendacity, Micro Crisis, The Exonerated. He was in To Kill a Mockingbird at the Rep. He is a drummer, and this marks his 20th year as a cultural partner with the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra's Arts in Education program. And thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Particular interest in those of you who have seen the show, although the issues we'll be addressing are issues of our times and times past and times future. So feel free to call us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. I saw the play last night with my son, who is in his 20s, and it was interesting. We had different perspectives. His generation has a different perspective on issues of race than I think mine does, and he wanted the play to have some kind of resolution. Let's take some action. We want to be inspired to right this wrong. We have to understand each other based on race in all its complexity, and I guess when you leave the performance, you're thinking, this is the way it is. It really isn't a call to action. Is it or is it?
I don't think so. Not from Mamet's perspective. I think he's trying to get us to consider consider real conversations. Because I think from his point of view, I mean, he puts it in Jack's mouth saying it's not going to change for a long – it might change, but not for a long, long time. As mm-hmm. far as racial divisions go, so I think maybe what he leaves people with in the play is examining, considering that none of us is, you can't just say race is not my problem; it's somebody else's problem. I think it's everybody's problem. I think if there's anything that can be generally drawn from the piece, that might be it.
Mm-hmm. Lee, what do you think?
Well, I feel like he's tapping into things that we see going on all the time around us. Do we try to make those changes? I guess probably individually we do, but it's here in Milwaukee. I mean, I just heard a piece today about the segregation of the different neighborhoods, for instance. You know, it's widespread, and it's America. That's what's going on, and until folks really discuss openly how they feel and want to make changes, it won't change.
Mm-hmm. And which I think Mamet sets an interesting and positive example with the two lawyers, the partnership of Jack and Henry, a 20-year collaboration of these two, black man and white man, and they seem to at least be able to share frank opinions and viewpoints about racial issues between the two of them. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have survived all for 20 years if they had not had that basis. So.
But in rehearsal, we talked about whether or not they have a social life outside of job, or is it the money that brings them together?
Oh, that's interesting. What did you determine?
We determined probably not. You know, after the day is done, right, after the money is made, they go to their separate lives and they live their separate lives. And right, that's interesting in itself.
Yeah. What was also interesting is that here are two people who are obviously, you would think, kind of progressive, you know, African-American, white guy working together for all of these years. Maybe unusual in American legal circles for a small firm to be made up that way. And for 20 years, young mm-hmm. woman enters who's also African-American, who kind of shakes things up. But both of you have in your characters your own kinds of thoughts, prejudices, perhaps, about Hispanics, about young African-American women. I mean, you've got your own sets of things to deal with that just sort of pop out, and you're yeah. supposed to know better, right?
Exactly. It's what's interesting is it's written in a way that for Henry, you know, who's black, dealing with an African-American woman, there's a prejudice there because we're talking age. We're also talking, you know, he came up from the old school, you know, the yes sir, yes ma'am thing, and she's very progressive, you know, and that whole thing rubs him the wrong way. And from the beginning, he goes, wait a minute, she wasn't honest. So, that's, first of all, that tells about integrity. And old school is like, it's about rules and being straightforward and being honest. And yet she came in right off the bat, and he felt something there. But you'd have to see the play to see exactly what
right.
that's all
right.
about.
Right. But in connection with that, then Jack, in response to learning that she's lied on her employment form, Jack still wants to hire her and take her on as a project. And out of his more sort of liberal mindset of saying, this is what I will do, and this African American has promise, and I'll take her under my wing and teach her the ropes, and ignoring or overriding Henry's more basic idea that, look, if she's black or white, the woman lied on her employment form, that indicates non-trustworthiness, let's forego it.
Mm-hmm.
And that sneaks up on Jack toward the end of the play as
yeah.
well.
And also the issue of affirmative action, which I found interesting, that he thought that she shouldn't be there because he pulled himself up by his bootstraps, perhaps, and she was
so
there because she was a woman.
Yeah, so to speak. But and that's the way he thinks.
Right.
And there are people who think that way.
Right.
But, you know, he doesn't look into it as, wait a minute, what did parents do to get him to a place where he actually could get an education? You know, who were they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to get him to that place. And that's kind of like, there are people who make it and they never look back. And then there are people who make it who look back to help others. And I think Henry's one of those cats that never looked back,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. See, it's interesting you were talking about what happened in rehearsal. What happened it's a small cast that you're dealing with here. Did you all have conversations, I would think maybe you did, about issues of race as you were doing this play, because that's what the play is about,
yeah.
partially, too.
Yeah, we've touched on numerous incidents from our own lives.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
What's very interesting is the first day of rehearsal, Ed Morgan, our director, said that we have to be open within that space. We should feel free to talk to each other about anything, to ask any questions.
Mm.
And so for me, it was quite wonderful to be able to just lay things on the table. I mean, I told stories of things that happened to me as a child that I never shared
really?
In my workspace.
Really?
And it was really kind of very, very refreshing. You know, I think we've learned a lot about each other in
mm-hmm.
that way. You know, some of the questions that came up with amongst the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's another interesting transformation in that. Maybe the most comprehensive transformation is through Charles, the character of Charles Strickland, who is the accused, and he's at the outset he seems pretty oblivious to his privilege, to his white privilege, and what outsiders could see as overt racial prejudices. He doesn't see that from within, and through the course of the play he comes to a realization that, oh my God, all this time I think he sees his privilege and sees the damage that he has done through ignorance and a veiled sort of bigotry, and that's a really a real moving point in the play. And Henry responds. What's your great line that Henry responds to?
Which,
you can quote that. It's such a great
some
line.
Of the language we have to be careful
which,
of. Yeah.
Yeah, the language. Which part would you be talking
right
about?
At the end when he says, my friend, I hurt him. He must have felt shame. And
he basically says, you know, we've all gone through a lot, you know. We've all put up with a lot from each other.
Yeah.
You know, and which is so simple, but so true, you know. I mean, I simply, a month or so ago, in my own state, in one of the suburbs I won't mention, but I was sitting in a restaurant and I heard two elderly white women speaking, and they were saying things that I said, now I'm not a small guy, so that you had to have seen me walk in and sit basically behind you. And for you to say, now we're going to have to start paying for their health care. And this Negro president is ruining our country.
Ooh,
I said, oh, my God. Did I just hear that? So the Lee and me wanted to stand and say, excuse me. That's very, you know, impolite. You know, but at the same time, I'm going, no, take that to the play. Use that energy for the character that you are. Where did Henry come from? What did he hear when he grew up? There's another line in the play that says, the slight that man's gone through, the things that, you know, the stuff that he's had to eat in his life, there's no way that 30 years ago he remembers that small one. Because how many big ones has he gone through, you know? So it was like, bring that to the character.
Interesting.
You know?
David, what would you have done if those women were sitting next to you?
I don't know. I, you know, you try to not dig into other people's business if you can. But one would hope you'd maybe mention or speak up and say, well, what don't look at the privileges that you've grown up with and try to translate that or try to imagine being in someone else's shoes, which is kind of the nature of what we do.
Exactly. I would think I'm not a huge fan of Mamet. I may as well say that. I mean, I find him really interesting and he's hard not to watch because it's just what's happening in the intrigue and, but he can be a little raw for me. But when I was looking at this play, I was thinking as performers, you probably have to bring a whole lot to what's going on there because the characters, you don't have a big sense of what their backgrounds are like or who they are, or if they're what their spouses are like, what they really think of each other. You have to bring a whole lot of what you just talked about to the performance, don't you? Because it's not necessarily in the script. Do you think or do you see it differently?
Well, I agree. We have to craft some form of what that person is above and beyond what they're saying. But conversely, he's also... The script is so in the moment. I mean, there are three scenes, each of them written in real time, which is pretty remarkable in today's theater literature. Usually you get 5 to 7 minute scenes and then cut to something new.
Yes.
He sustains real life for a long period of time. And so it's all, you're so needing to be engaged in what that character is wanting to do or trying to get accomplished in that second by second, moment to moment, that once the play begins, there's not much time to reflect on who he is. It's just it's just what's going on and what's next and why.
Mm-hmm.
For me, anyway.
Yeah, it is that. And like you said, Mamet, you kind of mentioned that he doesn't pull any punches. He says the kind of things or writes the kind of things that you would not say. And yet, as a character, you have to say it.
Right.
And you have to go there and you got to believe in what you're saying. And you got to live that, like David said, that moment. And it can be very raw. Mm-hmm. And it can be very exhausting, you know? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes.
I'll bet it is. Yeah.
Because sometimes you'll say something and go, wow, I just. And then, my line's coming in. You know, let me reflect. You got to reflect after the show. You got to stay right there. And but it's a lot of fun. It's very challenging to do.
Yeah. Do you like the play? Do both of you like the play? And why did you decide to do it in Milwaukee?
I do like the play. I have the first time I read it, I remember reading it straight through, not wanting to stop, which is a great sign. I very rarely will read a play the first time and have that happen to me. So that's one reason I was attracted to do it. Simply, the subject matter of race in Milwaukee or in the United States is an issue that we really have not dealt with in this post-racial age or something that people are labeling it, and there's an African-American president in the White House, and yet what we've seen in reaction to not only Obama's presidency, but other racial attitudes that are still out there is why I really felt strongly about doing it. One example of that, I looked into the death of that young Nathan Hale student, Corey Stingley.
Yes.
You know, I hadn't really seen much about that, but I got more in depth, did some more research about it on the internet through the articles, and then looking, what really shocked me was all the commentary that followed from individuals, and I thought, my gosh, this kind of racial hatred and stereotyping and bigotry is still out there. Mm-hmm. It's talk about not pulling punches. People are out there swinging with you know behind the anonymity of the internet all the time, and we've got to deal with that. Mm-hmm. We've got to acknowledge that that is still present in our lives, in the fabric of our society, and.
If you simply switch the colors of the people, you know, you don't even have to think about it. I mean, if those were black men holding down a white youth, where would we be?
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
it's a very disturbing case.
It's very disturbing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting that you're dealing with a city, as you mentioned, that is highly, highly segregated,
mm-hmm,
too.
Yeah.
So playing this, it would be nice if your audiences could be really racially diverse and everybody could talk about all of these issues, which isn't the case. But because we don't see each other very much, so we harbor, you know, our schools are segregated for mm-hmm. the most part. Our communities are really segregated here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're living in a different time frame than a lot of other cities in this country are.
Yeah, and we're, you know, we are certainly seeing more African American faces in our audience with this production, but admittedly not a great deal more. And I certainly want to put the invitation out there now to Milwaukee and surrounding areas: come on out, come down to Next Act and see this thing, and engage in discussion, if not in formal talkbacks. We come out after each performance and hang out around the concession stand and keep it open for business. And we've been meeting a lot of people, having some great chats.
Who are sending people back to the theater, like, you have to go see this piece.
Nice. Yeah. And that's what happens after seeing it, that you talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
really want to talk about it, that's for sure. KP saw it as well, and we talked about it this morning.
Okay, good.
People are talking. That's good. We welcome phone calls. I hope that some people listening have seen the production of Race at Next Act Theater. It's what we're talking about and all the issues that come forward as a result of seeing that play or reading that play. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter if you'd like to go there, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. David Cesarini is with us. He plays Jack Lawson, the white lawmaker in Race, and has been in theater for a number of years and artistic director for Next Act for 22 years. Lee Palmer plays the African-American lawyer, Henry Brown. He has performed in many shows at Next Act and is also a drummer and has performed in other theaters as well. Let's go to some phone calls. We start with Leah in Green Bay. Hi, Leah.
Hi.
Hi.
I happened to look out and meet David Mamet in January because he happens to go to my sister's synagogue in L.A.
Oh.
And he seemed very approachable. And my question is, when directors are directing a play where the author is living, do they ever call the author to check with them about what they had in mind?
Sometimes we do. It's especially if it's a brand new play or have maybe one or two productions, and perhaps the playwright has not achieved a certain level of notoriety as Mr. Mamet has. I think we once the play has been up and running for some time and had numerous productions around the country, we tend to allow the script to speak for itself. And I think Mamet would agree. He's very much a proponent of sticking to the script. He doesn't have much in line of stage directions or anything. He would be of the opinion that it's all there, so read it and figure it out.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Not many stage directions.
No, not many at all. I'm trying to let me look. I've got it right here. I think the most important stage direction he has is pause, and those are plentiful in the piece. It's very rhythmically written. The other thing about it is punctuation within the script. The sentences do not look as they sounded on stage. They're broken up with many periods, mostly, as if he's trying to help you organize how to express that thought in the spoken word.
Huh.
So we try to follow that as much as we can, at least in educating ourselves in how we think he hears the words, because he's got to hear this stuff in his head. The way he writes with such a speaking syntax. That's one thing that's been fun about doing Mamet. I hadn't done one before, and to get into his verbiage is an exercise in discovery, and it's fun to sling it around once you get
a
hold of it.
I imagine. Is this your first Mamet as well, Lee?
Totally, yes, it is, and I agree with what David said. It's very hard, though. It is very hard.
Yeah, I imagine.
You have to dive into it. I mean, he can be very wordy. And it's all being a drummer, being a musician, singer. It's very like a score, you know, much like a score. So it's a lot of fun to perform it nightly.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Leah, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Joan in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
All right. How are you?
Fine.
Good.
Thank you. I did see the play, and. You know, one thing I was wondering about, and I really like to hear your reaction of the actors. I felt like the White Lyre's role was so dominant over the Black Lyre's role, and I mean, I almost felt like the Black Lyre was the junior lawyer, although I know that wasn't the case. And was that just my perception, or did you ever feel like that, or is that written in the script?
I'll speak first to that. I think of my character, I think of Henry, the Black lawyer, I think of his character as being a little bit more relaxed. I mean, he speaks when he needs to. That's how I took it when I saw the script. Jack is a talker. You can see it by even in the performance. I mean, he likes to run his mouth. But when Henry speaks, he carries a big stick. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you picked up on that. You know, like at the end when Henry finally says, okay, let me put this to you the right way, because I could have made a fuss and we would have never hired her. But I'll go along with you on this one, Jack. Why? Because, you know, we've been partners 20 years. I'm going to let you find out by yourself, because over those 20 years, see, this is how you do it. You have to find out the hard way. So it kind of feels like that to me.
Yeah. Joan, I think that's the same. That's the same thing that David Mamet has set up for Jack. He lets him run off his mouth. And after all, the relationship is between Susan and Jack, as far as Jack being the mentor for Susan. And Mamet lets him get way out there on that limb. And then finally, the events and Henry's speech toward the end there reveal to Jack more of the truth that's going on. So I think there's some design to it.
Okay. Well, thanks. That really clears it up. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Did you enjoy the play?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was really powerful. And just like I think everybody walked out, people saying, why isn't there a topic?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we all knew why, but, you know, people felt it. Right. And the other thing, the night I went, I kind of looked around. There were two African-Americans in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought the same thing. I wish there would have been more of an equal... I am Caucasian, and, you know, I thought I wish there would have been more of a myth.
Right. Well, we're only halfway through.
Yeah,
halfway
and you know what was interesting? A couple, an African-American couple said to me, and you might find this interesting, she said, you know, we didn't laugh when the white people were laughing because we didn't find it funny.
But
at other places, they laughed. So I was like, that would be interesting just to know exactly what you didn't find funny.
Right, right.
You know, vice versa.
Interesting. Thank you.
It would be interesting to play for a 95% African-American audience.
Yes, that would be very interesting.
That I would
agree with you.
That would be great. Let's make that happen.
Let's make it happen. We'll help you in whatever way we can. Yeah, exactly. The New York Times reviewing the play when it opened on Broadway in 2009, and I'm wondering what your response is. The reviewer said this, that the play examines the self-consciousness that descends on American white people when they talk to about or to black people, the layers of perception that come into play any time white versus black and man versus woman have versus have not is the center of a sensational trial. The race of each character informs these perceptions as well. I'm wondering if you agree with that, and if that extends to take it beyond a sensational trial where there are issues of race, is that something that's omnipresent in most of our interactions, or are we beyond that?
I think given the milieu of a trial and these guys preparing or considering should they take it to trial and how to plead the case, I think that's the focus of Mamet's story here. That's where how he's looking at how these issues affect our proceedings in the courtroom. But I think they would certainly spill over into societal interaction. I think there is – we do have our own personal sensations of guilt, shame, historical responsibility, resentment, out-and-out hatred, all of those things in our – I don't know, hidden in our makeup in some degree or other. Again, I think he's asking us to examine ourselves to see what's in there, mm-hmm. what you really think.
But Lee?
I'm perceptive. Go ahead.
Well, he does touch on the reviewer does touch on a couple of things that are I think poignant. I do believe that race is that subject matter in our country that people don't want to approach. You know, it's very interesting when you see that. I mean, it's very interesting to live that as a black man in America, you know. It's very interesting to go from one town to another where there are differences, where people feel differently, you know. It's very interesting that the South seems to have changed over and the North took its place.
Oh.
It's very interesting to see that kind of, I mean, you cross over into Georgia in certain places and you go, wow, this feels really different. And then you come back home and you go, that's interesting. Listen how people are talking, you know. There's not a respect going on. You know, I mean, when we talk about different cases that hit the news, we go, wow, look at that. Now, and all you have to do, just simply switch the color and see what would be different, you know. And it's just, it's amazing. I mean, wasn't a big thing the other day, just recently, talking about the prison rate that's going on in our state, for instance. I mean, my gosh. I mean, all you have to do is open your eyes and go, what the hell's going on?
Right.
You know, I grew up in Milwaukee. I love Milwaukee. But I remember growing up as a kid having job programs in the summer, you know, being able to save my own money to take care of, you know, clothing and stuff for school. I remember after school programs, you know, boys clubs all over, YMCAs being, you know, affordable. I mean, there were things to do. There are no things to do for these children now, you know. And I'm talking all children. Now I'm talking about, think about the inner city. Where are the social centers? Where are the clubs? Where are the programs? Where's AFY, which was the football program when I grew up? I mean, there's nothing out there. And I used to tell kids that were in the foster system, you know, that, and you're being trained to go into the penitentiary. You're skipping school. Why? This is your education. Why are you skipping school? You know, you're being trained to go right into the system. Don't do it. And yet, what else is, you know, I look at some of these kids and I go, what do you have to do? What is it to do? I mean, especially when you think about this cold we've been going through, where do these kids have to go? It's, you know, there's no place. So I was lucky, you know, growing up in the 60s, 70s in Milwaukee because I had all these other outlets. They're not there anymore.
So are you saying then, if you look at both of you, or me, because I'm white too, that you would think on a daily basis you would be much more informed by racial issues because you're an African-American man than we would?
Obviously, yes. I mean, even walking the street, you know. I mean, like one of the things that it's really funny, but you become used to it. Someone smiling at you that doesn't know you because that's what they're trained to do, to smile at them, you know, or crossing the street, or switching your purse to the other side.
Oh.
You know, it's like,
Right, that happens a lot.
I have no, you know, I see you, but I'm going that way. Or, you know, what's really weird is if you're walking in the same direction, having to think of yourself saying, okay, I really would like to pass this person, but I don't want to scare them. You know?
Wow. But
it's there, you know? Or going into a store and watching somebody watch you or follow you, for that matter, you know? And it's like, hey, you know, I think I won't shop here now. You mm-hmm. know, you've offended me. Mm-hmm. I'm here to come get this item, but now I'll let you go on about your business. I'll go someplace else. But, like, things like that, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, driving your car.
Right.
Driving your car, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, hey, it's America. I ain't going no place. I'm here to stay. I love Milwaukee. I love my family. But, you know, yes, you are very, very aware of that.
Hmm. What do you think about what you just said, David?
Well, we chatted because I wrote an article about learning a little bit more about Lee Palmer. And those were revelations for me coming from an individual that I've known and worked with over some years now. And it's not something I haven't considered in a general way before. We've, you know, the driving while black incidents of people being pulled over is very prevalent, and it depends on where you are in the city.
Right.
You can almost predict it. But to have that as a personal experience coming from a friend and colleague is something else again, and it does bring your awareness up at least a notch.
Yeah.
To consider and to hold on to and to try to act upon.
Maybe this is what, when I went last night, the difference between generations or something. We talked about this at the beginning of the show. I was really struck by this, and what a gloomy look at the world this quote is from David Mamet, who said somewhat recently in an article in the Village Voice, I think, "I do not think that people are basically good at heart. I think that people in circumstances of stress can behave like swine, and that this indeed is not only a fit subject, but the only subject of drama."
Oh,
wow.
He is a cynic. He is very much a cynic.
Really?
I thought I was hard. Next act, I have a reputation, I would say, and proudly so, of not picking overly sentimental scripts. I like to address things in a more head-on fashion,
right?
And not give my audience a sugar pill to make them feel as if they've approached or attended something that's important, but not really. It hasn't been a threat. It has been easy to take. I like to go beyond that,
mm-hmm.
but I would disagree with Mr. Mamet on that.
Yeah,
that very significantly.
But hey, that's Mamet.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No, and he puts those words in Jack's mouth all the time. That
right.
It is. He does certainly reveal a cynical story within the courtroom and within the business of lawyers, as in, you know, I thought the courtroom was where we found the truth. No, it's where two advocates go, each wanting to win,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily wanting the truth, but telling, you know, with two fictions, which each side will try to impress upon the jury.
Mm-hmm.
That's what has to happen in court. That's what happened with the George Zimmerman trial, I would assert, for
mm-hmm.
instance. That
the play starts, we can't quote from it directly, but the first line of the play is fairly dramatic, and it's your line, Lee, in which you talk about some fairly sensational cases, very much front and center. Can you paraphrase what you say and why, and what frame of reference that gives us for the racial issues that will be a part of the play?
Well, he basically says, we've all heard, you know, one of my best friends is black. You know, we've all heard that. And he basically goes, talking to Charles, he basically says to him, all right, here is what white people say. So I'm going to tell you what it is you say. Okay. And he basically says, you want to tell me about black folks, I'll help you. And then he goes on to say, here's what y'all say. O.J. was guilty. Okay, that's what you say. Dr. King was wonderful.
He was a saint.
He was a saint. Right.
I mean,
yes.
That's what y'all say.
Right.
Malcolm X was noble when he got rid of, when he stopped thinking, you know, hardcore Muslim, you know, black Muslim type of thing. And then before that, when he was thinking hardcore black Muslim thing, he was misguided. You know, I mean, just interesting stuff when he sets it up. He's going, okay, this is what you guys say, you know. There's a couple of good lines in the play like that. I mean, he's laying the law. He's saying, okay, here's your lesson. Now you got to come back down to earth and listen to what we say, because that's the only way you have of beating this case. You can't be thinking out here privilege anymore. You got to come down to earth, because that jury can put you away.
Because that's what the jury's going to see. That's
exactly.
They're teaching him the liabilities of his case, the racial liabilities, the class liabilities, and sexism as well.
And they love, I mean, like the jury, they're basically saying the jury loves to bring down the big cats. Okay, you got to stop acting that way. It can't be.
So. And what is Mamet saying? What are you saying about the big cats having some sense of remorse? What does the play say about that? That's kind of a surprise, really.
Yeah, and somewhat soft-hearted, maybe on
right.
on Mamet's part. Maybe that belies his Village Voice quote a little bit. Let's hope so.
Yeah.
I think I touched on it before. That's the one. If there's a place with some heart in it, I think that's the place where actually Charles has a breakthrough about what he has truly been, and Henry comes in to say we all have to experience or take a lot from one another. I mean, we're all in this together. We're as a starting mm-hmm. point. I think that's a great place to be. You know, we're here together. Let's figure it out together.
Yeah, well, that's true, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's true. All right. Well, that's all. Then we just carry on.
Right.
We're in this together.
Yeah.
By golly.
Right. Well, it must be frustrating though for your son to not have that call to action, that specific thing. Let's just get this done. I think Mamet's saying it just ain't that easy mm-hmm. For all the hidden stuff and garbage that we all carry around with us, mm-hmm. and then we're not even aware of until perhaps we're in a situation.
Mm-hmm. What's the story with? I don't even know if you, as an actor, look at this at all, but as somebody who's interested in preparing for a show, I was reading what who Mamet dedicated the play to, who's mm-hmm. a conservative African American, mm-hmm. Shelby Steele, and what his political thoughts are, describing himself as a liberal Democrat. We're talking tomorrow at this time about why it's okay to be a liberal, actually. Well, it came to mind,
yay.
But has made some changes in how he views the world politically. Did you sense any of that? Do you see any political statements in this play?
No, there are several. There are several in the play, and I don't even want to give them away, but there are several. I mean, Mamet has this way of slapping you upside the face. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw the play last night, mm-hmm. and when it hits you, it's like when you think about that thought, he's already onto something else.
Right.
It's amazing. Yeah. You go, whoa, did they just say that? And then he's already someplace else. And sometimes he slaps you on the other side because you're still stuck with what you just heard. So, yeah, he's got a lot of stuff in there.
Well, specifically one political idea is affirmative action. I think he's pretty clearly mm-hmm. Not in favor of that. And that is a somewhat mixed issue in any case. But we did look into – he dedicates the play to Shelby Steele, and we looked into his literature, Mr. Steele's. He's written a book called White Guilt, and he's developed this whole theory on – a lot of the problems of racial relations are because of white guilt. I couldn't quite go there with his argument because it seemed pretty superficial in one sense. But I think that's something that Mamet's exploring throughout, looking at through Charles – and through Jack's character, my guilt of overriding Henry's more sensible direction to not hire this young woman because we don't trust her. My guilt in having asked her to participate in the case in some specific way and her refusing to do so and mm-hmm. my apology for that. He's working those themes into the play itself. Yeah. But like Lee says, it comes from all over.
Right.
he's working in all directions in this thing.
Right. So more phone calls in a moment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Race, the David Mamet play at the Next Act Theater in Milwaukee through February 23rd, right?
Yep.
And mm-hmm. we're speaking with the two leads in the play this hour of the show, which, you know, brings – because the title may indicate this, but there are all kinds of issues dealing with race and privilege and historical memory and the past operating in the present and all of that because of the nature of what this play is about. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org, Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. We go to Tom in La Crosse next. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
I was a contractor in Florida for about 20 years, and one of my good clients was a black contractor. And he and I talk openly about race all the time. He made a good point one time. He says, black people aren't prejudiced. We're just tired of all this. And then he added, speaking probably of Caucasians, it's not your color, it's your attitude. And I think this is going to, you know, we call it an issue. I think it's going to become a non-issue. It's like the weather. I like fall, you like spring. So what the hell? I think we need to get over the concept of difference and move on.
I wish there were more like you. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you so much, Tom, for your call. Lynn on email says, I agree with the guest who noted all the suspicious behaviors that some white people exhibit when confronted with a non-white person, except for one behavior. I think smiling at strangers is a Midwestern habit, and I think we habitually smile at everyone.
I love the comment.
Yeah, that's a good comment. Susan, the lawyer, the young lawyer who's hired to be a part of the firm, asks it of you, Jack, her boss, you think black people are stupid? See, I think, and your response is, I think all people are stupid. I don't think blacks are exempt. Golly,
that's
what
David
kind
Mamet.
Of? I know, you got to be kidding me. I think all people are stupid.
Well, I mean, it, certainly, it's Jack is loaded with hubris. That's an understatement, and I think he's just line by line setting them up. For what comes later, he's a full of himself kind of guy. For some part of that, it's well deserved. He's a smart guy, very quick on his feet. He's doing what he should be doing, but that comment certainly goes past the over the whatever it is.
I'd like to mention two of our cast members: Tiffany Renee Johnson, who plays Susan, and Jonathan Smoots, who does a wonderful job as Charles.
Yeah, that is a tricky role because it's not very well developed.
Right.
And yet there's a whole lot of, and of course he takes this huge turn toward the end. So Jonathan has been finding his way through this in quite a wonderfully subtle and yet very specifically drawn way. And Tiffany, what a great find. Up from Chicago, and she's I think we have the two easy parts.
I wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't either.
Susan, you know, she's keeping a lid on a lot of things for a lot of the play, and then suddenly things come to light, and she needs to rear up and take her own there, and that she does really do a fine job with that. So.
Yeah, we should talk more about what her role is because she isn't with us, and you're the two leads in this show, but her role is really crucial to the movement of the play.
For sure. For reasons of that you got to come see it, there are questions of perhaps loyalty within the firm that come out and that has an effect that have an effect on the case.
Mm-hmm.
And so, then we finally sort of start speaking really truthfully to each other toward the end of the play, and based on Henry's observations, things come to light that Jack was completely unaware of and blindsided by, and maybe Susan was too in a certain way, before she's pressed by these two guys into sticking up for herself.
What are the gender politics that become part of this drama?
Well, certainly hierarchy. I mean, she's hired fresh out of law school as an associate. They feel perfectly in their rights to order her about, to instruct, to put her in her place, and yet she's strong enough to fight for her own as well.
They're totally sexist at times.
And
I mean, totally
right. And with the unfeatured women that have sort of a part in the play. That would be the young black woman who is accusing Charles of the rape. She is spoken of as a prostitute, and they're figuring out. They're not exactly interested in whether or not the rape occurred or whether there was consent. They're interested in finding circumstantial evidence that could imply there was consent. Then there's a Hispanic chambermaid that sort of takes it on the chin later in the play, blamed for some new evidence. Showing again maybe Jack's unguardedness in some of his opinions that he's trying to keep under wraps, but come out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm interested, Lee, you were in To Kill a Mockingbird, and now you're doing this play. What's the substantial difference in the way both of those plays deal with race? Because To Kill a Mockingbird is still, I love that. I love that play. I love that movie. It was wonderful. But what do you think about it? It was interesting for you to have been in both of those. The audience response to both of them and what the substantial difference might be in a playwright's message.
Well, I will speak on my character alone.
Yeah.
Basically, Reverend Sykes, it's the Old South. I mean, they're hoping it could be different in that trial, but they're 99% they're 99% sure that there's no way that Tom is going to get off.
Yeah.
You know, but they have some hope because of Atticus' attitude towards, hey, if we can prove it right, will the justice system work? And so it's interesting that it's about the justice system again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and again, there's a story. He's proven his point. He's proven that he didn't do it. And yet the outcome is still the same. He goes to prison for it. And in this particular piece, what we're doing in Race, we're just trying to figure out the best story to tell so that we can get him off. How can we make her look bad? Though he's accused, how can we make her look bad to give the jury reasonable doubt? And that's all we're interested in, you know. And you can tell kind of by their posturing that these two lawyers, they're good at what they do. Mm-hmm. They know they're good at what they do. They're just looking for that loophole, and they find it.
Right.
They think.
Right. Yeah, it's true. Atticus and Jack Lawson don't have much in common other than being lawyers. But Kill a Mockingbird is a wonderful book, and it's a delightful piece on stage. It is what I would classify as a sentimental piece, because the audience can feel bad about what happened, and that's all terrible and everything, and we're sorry about that, and then we'll stand and applaud, which makes everybody feel good. In Race, you don't feel good because I think Mamet's saying, okay, what about you? Mm-hmm. What about you and you and you and you that I've all slapped around? What are you going to do about it? I think is a little more where Race is coming from. And not necessarily as easy an experience to pleasantly absorb. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm finding myself drifting toward Brecht. I never thought I'd do that. In seeing the theater as a place not to simply indulge in gentle fantasy, but to face some of our most daunting challenges and concerns and fears.
Which it should be. By golly, of course it should be.
Yeah. And what's wonderful is meeting people afterwards and hearing what they have to say, or seeing how moved they are, because it's a very moving piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very moving piece. You don't come to the theater and walk out and go, hey, okay, you want to go have a couple of drinks? You go, wow. I mean, it's quite a fun, you know, it's an experience.
Yeah, there was a guy on the Saturday afternoon show, big burly fellow, about 65 years old or something, with some maybe family members, and he says, well, you know, I'm in athletics mostly, but you know how I knew it was a good play? Because I turned to my wife at the end and I said, what time is it? He said, 90 minutes have gone by, and he was utterly sincere about it, saying, that's the sign. And it really is. It's an engaging piece, I think, for us on stage.
Absolutely.
I'm sure it is. Plus, it's intellectually stimulating. I mean, you have to pay attention to what's going on, which is really a good thing at the theater.
Which is fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It is fun. We're seeing. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It was good to talk with you after the show. The Race is playing now through February 23rd. 23rd. It's at Next Act Theater in Milwaukee. It's a David Mamet play, and you will be sure to have a lot of conversation about it. It just deals with so many important issues, which aren't always pleasant, but they are still with us. David Cesarini, who plays Jack Lawson, the white lawyer, he's been at the theater for 22 years, has been in theater for 36 years, and we thank him for being with us. Did I say he plays Jack Lawson? Henry Brown is played by Lee Palmer, who is the African-American lawyer. He's an actor, director, and choreographer, and we thank them both so much for being with us. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be with you tomorrow. We're going to be talking about sexual abuse, the first hour of the program, and it's okay to be a liberal, hour number two of our show.